This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Marianne Green, a high school theater teacher and executive director of the Tucson Fringe Festival. Welcome, Marianne.
Hi, I'm super happy to be here. I'm so excited.
Marianne, it's great to have you here today. Could we start off with you just simply defining for us, what is the Tucson Fringe Festival? How did it start? How long has it been going on?
Little mini history lesson here. In 1947, you thought I was kidding, right? In 1947, just after World War II, there was this Snooty Boots Festival called the Edinburgh Theater Festival. And there were all these artists who weren't allowed to perform in it. And so they were thinking, wait, isn't this the time we should be getting together as Europeans, as artists? And so they formed their own festival, literally outside Edinburgh, on the fringes of this festival, in like funky little theater spaces. So that idea caught on. And now there are over 200 fringe festivals all over the world. We're the only one here in Arizona. Nobody owns the fringe name, but we all operate under the same basic principles that we provide the artists with support, like venues, lighting and sound people, marketing, front of house, box office, that kind of stuff, so that they can really focus on creating their art. And depending on your model of, for your festival, you get somewhere that the artist gets somewhere between 80 and 100% of their ticket revenue back in their pocket.
So the Tucson Fringe Festival has been going on for 9 years, is that correct?
Yeah, this is our ninth year. We're headed into, we'll be in January 2020, will be our ninth festival. So it started in 2011 by two girls, Sarah and Yossi, who graduated from University High. They were seniors when I was teaching there my first year. Didn't have them as students, but they were both in choir and dance, and they just wanted a way to continue to be involved in the arts and to support other artists. So they started it in 2011. And it was a teeny tiny little festival at Club Congress. I think it may have been one night only, maybe two nights. And they had, I think, five different performing acts. And this year, or this past year, we had 20 performers, and the festival ran 4 days, and we had six different venues.
Wow. I hope those girls are very proud of their legacy. Could you tell us about how the call for shows goes out and how you decide what makes it into the show?
That's a great question. Every festival, almost every festival, runs some kind of lottery system. There are only a couple festivals in the country that are curated, that sort of handpick who gets to be in. And the rest of us pull names out of a hat. So quite literally, we take applications for about 2 months. So they're open during the summer, and then we'll all get together and literally pull names out of a hat until we have a completed schedule.
I understand that you do have a differentiation between local applicants and traveling applicants.
Yeah, so our applications are open to anyone. We have had a couple international applicants. This year we've got one from Vancouver. And a lot of festivals sort of put the artists into categories and save space for their local performers. We've chosen not to do that. So it is pure luck of the draw. Last year we were super fortunate in that it almost was exactly 50-50. So 50% of our artists were local, which we think is fantastic. We're supporting our community. And then 50% are out-of-towners, which is also fantastic because we're bringing these artists in that you wouldn't get to see. They're from like St. Louis and Minneapolis and New York, and we're bringing them to Tucson.
So these traveling artists, sometimes they are actually traveling performers who go to different fringe festivals all throughout the country or the world?
Yeah, there are people who sort of get fringe famous. and then there are other people who just, they have day jobs, but they're flexible enough and they just love what fringe provides. And there are lots of festivals that are our size or just a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller, and you really can sort of run the fringe circuit.
Could you talk to us about the benefits of doing a performing arts festival in this way?
So let's say you're an artist and you've got this really wonderful idea for a show. If it's a play, you need to find a publisher before anyone will do it. Or you need to find a theater company that's going to take a risk on somebody who's never been published before. Or if you're a dancer, you need to find a company and then a space, and then you need to hire technicians, and then you need to spend a couple $1,000s on marketing. And Fringe, we do all of that for you. So we give you a venue, we give you a lighting and sound person, we market the whole festival, we run your box office for you. So all you have to do is make the art. So you don't have to worry about all that other stuff, which sort of frees you up mentally, physically, emotionally, to focus on the whole reason that you're doing it. And the beauty of that is you get 100% of your ticket revenue back in your pocket.
So this model is particularly effective at providing an opportunity for artists to take risks, produce content that they might not produce otherwise. And it also, having a lottery takes away maybe some of the usual gatekeeping that you might find in another type of performing arts festival.
Yeah, so we use the terms uncurated and uncensored. And theater companies absolutely curate their material. That's their job. They have a mission statement, and they need to make sure that the material that they produce supports that mission statement. And so they really do curate what goes on their stage, and that's fantastic. But it does, the term gatekeeper is great because, yeah, it does sort of create a barrier for somebody whose content doesn't fit a particular mold. A lot of what you see at the Fringe is not traditional theater or not traditional dance, or it's a mix of dance and puppetry and multimedia and maybe some guy playing an electric guitar. And where is the space for that at, you know, the Rogue or Live Theater Workshop or ATC? There isn't the space for that, and so we try to create that space.
Given that anything goes, what kinds of shows might one expect to see at the Tucson Fringe Festival?
So if you've been listening to KXCI, you might have heard our call to artists. And my new little 30-second elevator pitch is, if you can do it legally on a stage in the state of Arizona in under an hour, you can do it at the Fringe Festival. So like I said, we do have some traditional theater. We've got a lot of one-person stories, like storytelling memoir kind of things, which is great for travelers because it's really easy to travel one person and one show and a chair. And but you can see just about anything. We've got some beautiful puppetry and dance. We've got clowning. There was burlesque, one particular show last year that we struggled to find a venue for, but we were so happy that we did. We wound up working with Cirque Roots, and it was a burlesque show with fire eating and glass walking. And not only did she do all three of those things on stage, but then she taught two volunteers from the audience how to eat fire and walk on glass. And I just thought that is like such the spirit of the Fringe. Just that we had one guy from Italy one time who did a rock opera of Faust at Club Congress. So really, to say like what kind of things can you expect, it's so hard because it runs the gamut. Yeah, anything goes at the Fringe.
How do you walk on glass? I'm really curious. I'm like, do you put your foot down really slowly, one little bit at a time?
I think it's a little physical and it's a little bit mental too. You just have to breathe into it, right? Like those really difficult yoga poses. I think I was more impressed with the she taught just some middle-aged random guy how to eat fire.
So those are the kinds of things we might expect to witness in terms of performance. What kind of an audience might we expect to see at the Tucson Fringe Festival?
Like a lot of theater in Tucson, our audience tends to look like a lot of the other theater audiences. They are predominantly white and predominantly over the age of 40. And that is something that we at the Fringe are really working at expanding, is expanding what our audience looks like age-wise, gender-wise, race, ethnicity, all that kind of stuff. We would like to think that Fringe is a home for non-traditional performance and for groups of people who don't necessarily feel like they have a home elsewhere on their stage. We want to make sure that Fringe feels like a safe place for everyone to tell their story. In the past, we've talked about making sort of lottery categories. So let's do just a local lottery and save a couple spaces, or let's do a lottery just for the shows that are produced by women or people of color. And the board is kind of always balked at that idea, just because we feel like it's our job to create that atmosphere where those people feel like they can apply. It's kind of like it's on us to go out there and share what we have to offer and make sure that everybody in Tucson, no matter what kind of person you are, who you are, make sure you feel like Fringe can be a safe place for you to produce your show, and a safe place to be an audience member, and where you can see yourself reflected in the type of entertainment that we offer.
Could you tell us about a few performances that stand out in your memory?
I brought my son, who's a teenager. I brought him to the festival, and I try to sort of curate an afternoon for him during the festival. And I brought him to a show called The Gay Uncle Explains It All to You. And that was his first Fringe experience. And it was by, he's a dear friend of mine now, named Jeffrey Robert. He's from Seattle, and he goes by The Gay Uncle. And his show was about how he learned what it meant to be a gay man in America through all of his pop culture idols, singers and actors and dancers and movie stars. And the really cool thing was that he painted portraits of all of these people on trash bags and old newspapers and trash can lids and just the most random things. And my son, who is not gay and lives in this little like white upper middle class bubble, he loved the show. 2 years ago, we had a woman come from St. Louis, Missouri, and she built herself as an Indian deaf punk poet. And she did her show in sign language and dance, and she had this multimedia video presentation that went on behind her, and it was just the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. And she performed it in Studio One, which is just this like sort of sparse white room. And she just lit up the room with the colors that she was wearing and the colors in her video. And the great thing about that was I helped her make some connections with ASDB. And so her show was ASL interpreted. So there was an audience that came to the festival that might not have come otherwise. And thanks to that experience, we are again working with the U of A and ASDB. And we will have one day of the festival, hopefully, that is entirely ASL interpreted. I think one of my other favorite shows was by Michael Finlayson, who was actually used to sit on our board, and he's recently passed on. His show was called My Muse is a Woman Who Hates Me. And it was just him and then a recording of a woman's voice that it was this hour-long conversation between him and his muse. And I always said about Michael that he wrote women so beautifully. And that was just a gorgeous show. And I never knew. I knew Michael as a friend, and I knew him as a producer and a board member. And to see him as a writer and an actor, I was just blown away. And it just made me understand who he was a little bit more.
Given that the Tucson Fringe Festival is an unjuried, uncensored opportunity to push the envelope, how do you handle shows that cross a line for some people?
That's a really great question. And it does happen. A couple times we've gotten emails from people that say, I just saw two shows back to back and they were terrible and I hated them. But it happens. And as the producer, you have to say, you know, that's the nature of the Fringe. Here are a couple shows that might fit more into your interest level. But yeah, that's a hard line to walk when you're not censoring, and that's not our job. But at the same time, how do we make sure that the audience is prepared for what they're going to see? So last year we had a show in the festival that it really rubbed some people the wrong way. It was written to be sort of incendiary. It was meant to ruffle feathers. And I think the objective by the writer was to maybe start conversations about how we use language and how we perceive people. But it was really harsh, to the point where the people that I was with in the audience afterwards, we were quite literally speechless. And as the producer of the festival, I thought, oh, I'm going to hear about this one. And I have. I have heard about that particular show. And so for me, rather than to sort of backpedal and be like, oh, crap, what do we do? What do we do? We had to think about, okay, that happened. And what can we learn from that? This year, we are creating, for lack of a better term, hashtags for each show, which will help the audience know a little bit better what they're getting in for. And they'll be as simple as like, this show has puppets, or this show has dance, or this show is about women's issues, or this show is straight theater. And then the next level is like, this show has bright lights or loud music or uses a strobe. And then we're also going to have tags that say things like, this show has, you know, politically charged speech, or this show has depictions of sexual violence, so that you can know as an audience member, rather than paying money for a ticket and then getting the program and seeing, oh, there's a trigger warning on the program and I've already paid $10. You know, what do I do from there? So we're not in the business of censoring, and I don't want to censor. We can't. That's not what Fringe is about. We'd be a different festival if we did that. But I think what we can do is, I keep using that word safe, but make sure that people are just a little more informed about what they're going to see. And on the production end, maybe do a little more. I don't ask for scripts. Artists don't send me their full scripts, but just to know that content is there. Helps me be a better producer, and hopefully gets them the audience that they want. So in the long run, we hope everybody wins from that experience.
It's such a really interesting fine line that the festival walks in the sense of really, you know, trying to be as much of a free-for-all as possible, but still wanting to be, you know, kind of an inclusive and safe space. But there's that line between safe and brave.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that right now, maybe we're in a particular time where racial rhetoric is really ramped up, racist acts, hate crimes, we could talk about that too. So what can be done in a public or semi-public forum today versus maybe 5 years ago might be two different things. And it's really fascinating to see how different people come at different subjects.
Yeah, it's a conversation that theater companies and universities are having all over the country. Like, how much do you warn the people that are going to be seeing this, what they're about to see, and how much of it does, like, as a creator, I think he really wanted people to sort of go in blind and be shocked by what they were seeing. And that was his objective. And, you know, as a producer, I guess I kind of had to honor that. But at the same time, I felt a responsibility to those people in the audience. And I did feel like I let them down a little bit. But like I said, I'm hoping that experience creates a better festival for next year. And yeah, I don't want to be that festival that tippy-toes around things.
Yeah, and we're not going to move forward as a society if we are too afraid to deal with things head on. Could you talk to us, Marianne, about a performance or a talent that debuted at the Tucson Fringe Festival and then went on to bigger things or a next stage or...
This is kind of how... I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but this is kind of how I got so involved in Fringe. I had written a scene for my students, actually, and they loved it. And they were like, this has to be a show. And so I wrote, I think, 10 pages. And then I heard that the festival was happening. I think it was the third year of the festival. So I applied and I got in. And then I was like, oh, crap, now I have to write the rest of it. And I did. And I got another former student to write some original music for it. And we sold out two nights at Club Congress, which was just like the coolest feeling in the whole world. And then later on, I was talking to the two performers about what a great experience that was. And we loved the characters and so much that we like missed them. And one of them had actually moved to San Diego by then. And I looked and lo and behold, San Diego had a Fringe Festival. And so I was like, guys, what if we took it on the road? And we did. And we totally bombed in San Diego. We had like seven people in the audience, but it was a really cool experience. And I wound up working for San Diego Fringe for a couple years too. I did their street performance, coordinated their street performances. And so when Sarah and Yossi asked me to be on the board for Tucson Fringe, I was like, yes, please. And 5 years later, here I am. This weekend, I was at the Minneapolis Fringe, and I opened the door to one of the venues, and there was a huge poster of my friend Tyler West. And he came to me a few years ago, and he said, I have this show that I've been working on, and I don't know if I should do it at Fringe or if I should find another venue, maybe at Live Theater Workshop. And I said, why don't you do both? You know, use LTW as your sort of test run, and then Fringe can be your big thing. And he said, oh, I don't know. He was a BFA student at the U of A, and Fringe was the same weekend as his senior showcase, where agents come from all over the country to hopefully sign you, right, as a senior graduating from college. So he managed to put it together the same weekend, and he did not get signed by an agent, but he had a standing room only, sold out show, standing ovation at the Tucson Fringe Festival, and then went on to San Diego Fringe and Cincinnati Fringe and Minneapolis Fringe. And next month he is headed to Sydney, Australia for the Sydney Fringe.
Tidbit about Tyler West. He's a little person.
Yeah. So when we sat and had that conversation about what he should do with the show he was working on and talking about agents coming to see him, I asked him, I said, does it frustrate you to know that you can be the best actor, but nobody's ever going to cast you as Tom in the Glass Menagerie? And he was like, yeah, it frustrates the hell out of me. And so to be able to provide a place where Tyler can thrive, like not just like, oh, I put on a show, but he is killing it. He's becoming one of those fringe names where it's like, oh my God, Tyler West is at your festival? And I'm just like, I get chills thinking like how awesome it is that he started here. And he's a Tucson kid. He went to Sabino High School, U of A. And so the fact that we could provide that little trampoline for him to jump off of, and I can't wait to see all the amazing things that he does.
It really is, you know, a classic story of the Fringe Festival doing its thing, right?
Yeah.
Providing a venue for people who don't have a home or don't fit in.
Right. And that's exactly what we're here for. We're here for that person who's got a scene and doesn't know what to do with it. And then all of a sudden they have a deadline. Just, you don't have to have a completed script. You don't have to know where it's going to end up. You just apply, and some people work better under a deadline, myself included. So your name gets pulled, and then you've got 4 months to turn your vision into a reality. And like I said, we're here to support you how we can, and so that you can focus on creating those artistic risks.
At our Tucson Fringe Festival, you might be reviewed.
Yeah, so Kathy Allen, God bless her, she put together, I like how you put it, she put together an army of reviewers last year. So Fringe Festival is not a huge moneymaker for everybody. Surprise, surprise. So we think about what else can we offer artists? Like if they're, you know, gonna maybe take a little financial hit, what else can we give them? Creatista Photography does beautiful photographs, and they hit every show. So the artist gets a whole folder of these professional photos that they can use for just about anything. And then Kathy and her army of reviewers went to every show in the festival in the first day and a half and posted quick reviews on the Arizona Daily Star site and on our Twitter and on our Facebook. So artists can use those, you know, little snippets of reviews in applications for other festivals that do curate. They can put them on their posters. And then we also do awards at the end of the festival, like a lot of them do. So they can say, oh, we got, you know, best act with music at the Tucson Fringe, or my favorite award is the Spirit of the Fringe. So it might not be the best show or the funniest or the one that sold out most, but the audience votes on which show just felt the fringiest. And I do think Tyler's show got the Spirit of the Fringe that one year.
And I understand that if you're lucky and you're an out-of-towner performing, you might even get hooked up with some free lodging.
Yeah, that's another huge thing that these smaller festivals, we kind of struggle to provide that. And 2 years ago, we had housing for 3 or 4 of our travelers. And then last year, thanks to some really hardworking board members and volunteers, we found housing for all of our out-of-town performers, including a group of six from San Diego who all wanted to stay together. We found housing for a one-woman show and her dog. Thank you to the Tucson community for literally opening your doors to the Fringe and our performers.
One last question, Marianne. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and the path that brought you to the Tucson Fringe Festival?
So I moved to Tucson about 25 years ago to get my teaching degree in theater. I worked at Centennial Hall for a couple years as a technician, so I've always been in theater, and then got the teaching job and honestly hadn't heard about the Fringe Festival until my students were invited to perform at Edinburgh. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. We just couldn't raise the money. But I did get to go to Edinburgh to preview what the festival was like. So I came back from Edinburgh thinking, like, I have to have this in my life. It was fantastic. So then when I found out that Tucson had one, I was like, great, cool. And then when Sarah and Yossi invited me to be on the board, I just thought, this is exciting and what an opportunity, and all my cool friends are on board, so why not? And for them to sort of hand the festival over to me a couple years ago, it was terrifying. I don't have any nonprofit business experience. I don't have any business experience, but I do have experience as a performer, as a director, as a writer, as a producer, and as a technician. So I can kind of come at the back door through all those venues. And fortunately, we have a really solid board this year with lots of nonprofit experience. So they make sure everything's on the up and up and legal and all that good stuff. And I can support the artists the way I know how to.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah. So this year we are going to be January 9th through the 12th of 2020. January 9th will be our 2-minute preview party, which is something we instituted last year. So you'll be floating around town and you'll see the posters, and then maybe you'll see a program with all the shows, or you'll go on our website and see a picture of the show. And you're like, okay, that looks interesting, but how do I know I want to spend $10 on that? So you come to our 2-minute preview party and you get to see a little, it's like going to the movie theater and seeing the previews before the movie.
Thank you for being with us today, Marianne.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.